Then the misery got worse than ever before. It was physical as well as mental. My heart and ribs and shoulders and chest, even my arms, ached. I longed so desperately for someone to comfort me that I went and laid my head on Miss Blossom's bust. I thought of it as soft and motherly, under a royal blue satin blouse, and imagined her saying, "That's right, go through it, not round it, ducky. It's the best way for most of us in the end." And then a different voice spoke in my head. A bitter, sarcastic voice, my own at its very nastiest. It said, "You've sunk pretty low, my girl, clasping a dressmaker's dummy, and aren't you a bit old for this Miss Blossom nonsense?" Suddenly I saw her more vividly than ever, standing behind the bar of an old-fashioned pub. She looked at me most reproachfully, then put a sealskin jacket over her blue blouse, turned off all the lights, and went out into the night, closing the door behind her. The next second, her bust was as hard as a board, and smelt of dust and old glue, and I knew she was gone forever. Religion. Strong drink. Oh, but there is another way of escape, a wicked one, far worse than drink. I tried it on my birthday a week ago. When I woke up that morning, the sun was shining, the first time for over a fortnight. I'd barely taken this in when I heard music just outside my bedroom door. I sprang up and dashed out to the landing, and there on the floor was a small portable wireless with a card on it saying, "Many happy returns from Stephen." That was why he had posed for Leader Foxcotton. When I got down, I found that Stephen had set the breakfast table for me and put flowers on it. "And there's my present," said Thomas. "I haven't wrapped it up because I'm just in the middle of it." It was a book on astronomy, which he is very much interested in. Father came down then. Of course, he hadn't remembered my birthday. He was horrified to see the wireless. He has always said that being without one is one of the few pleasures of poverty. But he got interested during breakfast. I mean, he couldn't bear the music or voices. What he liked were the atmospherics. All that mattered to me was whether or not Simon would send a present. The parcel post came at 11. There was a dressing gown from Topaz, a Shakespeare from Father, so tactful of Topaz to remember how he hates lending me his, a nightgown, real silk, from Rose, 6 pairs of stockings from Mrs. Cotton, and a big box of chocolates from Neil. Nothing from Simon. Nothing from Simon, indeed. I was still sitting numb with disappointment when a motor horn hooted in the lane. The next minute a van drew up, and the driver plonked a crate down on the drawbridge. I yelled up, asking Father to come down, and between us we prized the lid off. Inside was a wireless and a gramophone combined. Oh, the most wonderful thing! When shut, it is like a fat suitcase with a handle to carry it. With it, there were some Bach preludes and fugues, as well as the Debussy album. Nobody ever had such a glorious present. Father said, "Has it occurred to you what this is going to do to your swain?" All that I felt was resentment against Stephen, because his being hurt was going to interfere with my pleasure in Simon's present. Not very much, though. Nothing could do that. By the time Stephen got home, my better nature had asserted itself, and I was terribly worried about his feelings. I had his wireless in the kitchen, and was careful to have it on full blast when he came in. I nearly burst myself thanking him for it, and I don't think I have ever seen him look so pleased. I did my best to break the news to Stephen tactfully, but the light went out of his eyes. He asked if he could see Simon's present. I had carried it up to my bedroom.